I was brought up in England with a so-called normal household. My dad was a banker, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. And it was a very strict English upbringing. You were seen and not heard. I was the middle child. I always called myself the black sheep. I had an older brother and a younger sister. And my dad paid attention to my brother. And my mom paid attention to my sister. And my dad beat me. My dad beat me with anything that he could pick up. With pipes, metal pipes, sticks, you name it, I got it. And it started, and that for me, that was a normal behavior for me. That's what I learned very quickly. By the time I was 5 years old, I was a runaway. And when I ran away and I would always get picked up and I would get brought back home, I would never understand why. And I love that passage. I read that this morning, that when Jesus stayed in the temple when he was 12 years old and his parents came back and got him. And they said, you know, what have you done to us? And he couldn't understand because he was in his father's house. And just like that, I didn't understand why my parents came and got me, because I didn't feel like I belonged. I was a little guy, 5 years old, 6 years old, running away from home. I'd get on my bike and I would just pedal because I was looking for a place to belong, looking for a place to be where I didn't feel like I was accepted at home, and I was looking for that place. By the time I was 8 years old, I was already in trouble with the police. I was arrested for the first time at 8. Yes, you can believe that I was. Even, you know, going back a few years, my first day of school in England, you go start school at 5 years old. And I walked into school and I went in there and I looked around and I looked at everybody and I told everybody where they could go. And I walked out, and I started walking back home. And the principal or the headmaster was following me. They called my brother out of class, and they started chasing me. So sooner the pace picked up, I ran faster, they ran faster. And I didn't understand. I didn't understand, if I didn't want to be there, why would I have to be there? And it didn't make sense to me. When I was 11, 12 years old, my dad got a job transfer to Bank of Montreal here in the Okanagan, and we moved over here, and that was a huge culture shock for me. It was, if things could get bad for me, it got worse for me. At 13 years old, 14 years old, I found drugs and I found alcohol, and I felt like I had found my best friend. I mean, I picked up this beer, and I thought I found my best friend. I thought, this is where I belong. This is what I wanted. It made me feel somebody like who I wasn't. It made me feel like I was at home. It made me feel like I was at peace. And then I started doing drugs. I didn't go to like you hear drug addicts starting off with a little bit of pot here and now. I went straight to the hard stuff. I went straight to acid, mescaline, heroin, peyote, you name it, cocaine. I did it. By the time I was 16, I was at a house party, and I stood up on the coffee table at the house party, and I told everybody to shut up, and there was a couple of hundred people in the room, and I announced that my name is Nick, and I'm an addict, and I'm an alcoholic. And I was serious. I was true. I wanted attention, and I wanted it now. I wanted it then. And everybody laughed at me because they knew Nick. They knew Nick was a jokester. They knew Nick never take Nick serious. And I was mad because I was. And that night I went home and I tried to commit suicide for the first time. And that was a long line of attempts to commit suicide. Of course, none of them worked because I stand here today. And it's only by the grace of God. By the time I was 17, I'd been kicked out of school. And then my violence started really picking up. I was known as a fighter. I scrapped anybody, anytime, any place. I loved to fight. That's what I was known for. And that's what my dad taught me. He taught me how to hit. And I was good at it. And I was very good at it. By the time I was 18, I had already had probably over a dozen assault charges. And I had now I'm in prison for the first time. And being in prison for me many times throughout my life, it wasn't a harsh place for me. It was a getaway. It was some place where I felt safe, not from other people, but safe from myself. And I didn't mind it at all. And, you know, it may sound sad or a sick thing to say, but I actually liked it in there. And things did get worse, but I always looked for something. I became addicted to so many things. I became addicted to relationships, to not only the drugs and the alcohol. And then I thought, well, if I meet a girl, and I was 18 years old, if I meet a girl, then she'll help me settle down. She'll help me control me, because I was out of control, and I knew I was out of control. And I met a girl. I met a girl from Palm Springs, and she was a strong woman at that age. She was a little cheerleader, about 5 foot nothing. And she called me. I was at a party one time, and I was on top of this guy, and I was beating him. And she came up and pulled me off him, and I said, "Don't you know who I am?" And everybody else was saying, "Don't you know who that is? That's Nick. You don't touch Nick. You don't talk to Nick like that." And she didn't care. She stood up to me. And that was great. And I called her every name in the book. And next week, we were on our first date. 6 months later, she was pregnant, and we were married. And I thought she would change my life. I thought she should change my life. And at this time in my life, I wasn't a believer in God. I was brought up very far from God. You didn't mention God. You didn't mention Jesus. I was brought up in a very racist household. It was white people, and that was it. If the TV channel even had a black person on it, we weren't allowed to watch that channel. And this time in my life, I also belonged to Worldwide Church of Satan, ran by Paul Valentine out of New York. And I liked this guy. I liked him because he preached through a world of hurt, a world of pain, that life sucks. And I agreed. And I liked that. And I bought into that. And I used to go to these huge cult parties. And this guy used to, there'd be a couple hundreds of people at these parties, these big tents. And I used to go there, and I'd be fascinated with this guy. This wasn't Paul Valentine himself, it was another guy. And there'd be people out there with their placards, you know, protesting, you know, "Get out of town, get out of this." And he would walk around, and he would call these people in, and I used to watch him. I'd be fascinated with him. And he would take them into this tent, and about 10, 15 minutes later, he would come back. They would come back out, and they were changed people. He would have them. And I go, "Wow, I want to be like that. I want that power. I want that power, and I can do that." And so I did. I thrived on that. That's what I wanted. We had two children, Sean and Chelsea. And they're great kids. I have three grandchildren as well today. And it's amazing that they are back in my life. My wife left me after 7 years of marriage. She came home one day and she said, "I'm leaving you." And I said to her, "What took you so long?" And that was it. My life got worse. Now I'm 28 and I'm single. I don't want to have anything to do with my kids because I knew I'm out of control. I'm a full-blown drug addict. I cannot leave my house at this time. The police won't leave me alone because they're parked out my side of my door 24/7. Every time I leave my house, they leave or they pull me over. And this went on for 2 or 3 years after that. They thought if anything happened in the province or even Canada, they thought I had something to do, or though I knew that I had something to do. So I was constantly pulled in, interrogated, questioned. And this was my life for 2 or 3 years. And it was normal to me. This is what I lived. This is what I liked. And I liked the attention. I liked the power. One day I was tired. I was 29 years old. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of not being able to move. I thought I had everything. I had all the money. I had the big house. I had two motorcycles. I had a car. I had a truck. I had more money than what you could do with, knew what you could do with. I was probably bringing close to $25,000 a week. And I loved the life. I was surrounded by it. I mean, it's like the movie you see on TV. You got the gangster lifestyle. You're surrounded by all the girls, all the drugs, all the stuff you could ever want, whatever you think you want. But I was empty. I was hurt. I was empty. I was suicidal. And there was nothing. I hated life. I hated me. The self-hatred that grew inside of me was unreal. And still, there was no way it was going to be God. I opened up my door at when I was 29 years old. This was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and there was 3 police cars standing outside. And I opened up the door, and I said, "Come on in," and they raced in. They had wanted this opportunity to search my house for years, and they came in and searched my house. And they couldn't find anything. I'd made sure that they weren't going to find anything. And they just sat down across from me, and they said, "What do you want, Nick? What do you want?" And I said, "I just want to get clean and sober." And so they called a man from AA, and he came over immediately, and he took me to my first AA meeting. I went to a meeting every day for a year for the next year. And when I got my year cake, I thought I graduated, and I went back out and drank again. And my career just got worse. I hated life, but I thought I could control it under my own terms. I got married again. This time it was from a call girl from New Jersey. I thought she was going to cure me. We both had the same kind of addiction, and we both lived the lifestyle, and so we got married. And when you got two addicts married together, it's hell. We'd spent the next 3.5 years abusing each other physically, verbally, every way you can. And my career got worse. By this time, and now my reputation has soared in that world. And I hate to, I'm not trying to glorify that world at all, but now I'm making more money. I'm traveling places. I'm getting paid to collect debts. I work at doors. I'm a bodyguard. I collect debts with a gun. I pull people down. I take them on their last hunting trip, I used to call it. If they didn't pay up their money, I would take them out. This was my life I lived. I hurt people. I've been in rooms. The worst gangster story or movie you've ever seen. I've lived it. I've been there. I still smell smells today. I hear screams today. I've seen what human beings can do to people. And I lived that life for another 12 years. And I loved it. I loved it, but I hated it. I hated what it was doing to me. And my addiction got worse. My tolerance for alcohol and cocaine got huge. I was a binger because you can't do that kind of work and be a practicing full-time drug addict. So I was a binger. I could drink 48 beer in a night. I could smoke 2 ounces of cocaine in a weekend. That's a huge habit to have. Huge. I by this time, my assault charges were even more, and I went back into prison. I had 24 assault charges at this time, and numerous other weapons charges, and I went back into prison. And this time, I thought I'm close to 40. I need to smarten up. I need to get a life. I knew it, but there was no way it was going to be God. And it didn't matter how many times I'd been in hospital, how many times I'd been in prison, and the preachers came and preached to me and told me that I need Jesus. I would tell them where to go, or I'd just outright hit them, because there was no way it was going to be God. I was in prison, and I just swore, I'm not going to go back to that lifestyle. There's no way I'm going to go back. I've still got everything. I've still got my house, still got my car, still got my truck, still got my motorbikes, and everything is still looks good on the outside, and I'm functioning. And I came back, I got out, I got released, and 2 months later I'm back doing the same work. I came home one night, and I sat on the couch, and I had my gun on my lap, and I just said, this is it. This is it. I don't want to do this anymore. I cannot do this. There was so much. I was at that point where there was so much pain, so much hurt, so much stuff that I couldn't shut my head off at this time. The screams and the blood, the smell of the blood, that lifestyle just caught up to me, and I'd had enough. And I picked up my gun and I put it to my head. And I knew it had worked because it just worked. I just used it, I mean. And I pulled the trigger, and the bullet got jammed. And so I slid the trigger back, the thing, and I got the bullet unjammed. And I put it to my head again, and I pulled the trigger again, and it got jammed again. And I looked up, I stood up, and I got off the couch, and I stood up, and I threw my gun across the living room. And I looked up at God for the first time, and I said, what the f*** do you want from me? I couldn't do anything right. I couldn't even kill myself. I didn't know then that God was watching out me. He let me go through those things to get me to the point where I had to be broken, where there was no other way for me to left. He kept me alive. I still don't understand that, and I probably never will, why he let me do things to people that he let me do and why he works the way he does. But I know by the love of God and God's grace, I stand here today. 2 weeks after that, two, three months after that, I'm sitting on the same couch, just got home. Got my gun in my lap again, and the door gets kicked down. 4 RCMP officers with guns drawn are telling me to put my gun down. And I said, no, I wanted them to shoot me this time. I wanted suicide by cop. I couldn't do it, so I thought, figured somebody else can do it. And at this time, I wasn't scared of guns. I mean, in that lifestyle, I'd been shot at. I'd been stabbed. I'd been had guns pushed up my nose, sawed up, shotguns, guns to put to my head. That was the lifestyle. I lived the lifestyle for 30 years where I thought every day when I woke up, this could be the last day. And I knew it. It was either I take somebody out or they take me out. And that was normal for me. That was my life. I didn't know anything. I didn't know any different. That was the way it was. Police came in, guns drawn, put your gun down. No, you put yours down. No, you put yours down first. And one of the cops traded up for a taser, and I got tasered. Now I'm back inside again. And now I'm back, and I'm in, and now I've become the head cook in there. It goes on seniority, and I had the highest paying job in the prison. I was the head cook, and I got paid $5.50 a day. It was no taxes either. And I loved my job because it made time go a little bit faster and it kept me out of trouble, and it was good. I got to just talk to people, and one day I worked 2 days on. It was 14, 16-hour shifts. You started at 4:30 in the morning, and I had 2 days off, and I came out of, I was on the top tier, and I put my hands on the railing, and I looked out one morning, and everything had changed. I didn't know what happened. But everything changed. There was a silence. There was a peace over the whole prison, over me. And I looked around and I was asking people, like, what's going on? And people just looked at me. They were weird. They just thought Nick was being Nick. And I knew the guy in my house, in my cell, had a Bible. And we used it for rolling papers because they had the onion skin papers. And they were good for rolling cigarettes or joints or things like that. And I asked him, I said, just some reason, if you knew me back then, there's no way that I'd be picking up a Bible and asking to borrow. And I asked this guy if I could borrow his Bible, and he said, yeah. So I grabbed it and I took it down to the prison chaplain, and I looked at him and I go, where do I start? And he looked at me and he just said, read Psalm 51. And so I took it back up to my house and I read Psalm 51, and I bawled. I cried snot and tears like I've never cried in my life before. And Psalm 51 was when David had cheated on Bathsheba and murdered Uriah. And now he's asking God for forgiveness. And that's what I couldn't do. That is what I couldn't do, is forgive myself for what I had done. I could forgive everybody else, but I could not forgive myself. And I hated myself for it. 3-4 months later, I got an early release by the grace of God. And I had to go to Miracle Valley in Mission. It's closed down now. It's run by the Salvation Army. And there was about 120 to 150 drug addicts in this place. And there was probably maybe half a dozen of us that were on parole that were allowed to go there. And I heard this, they used to have this course called Alpha, and it's run by this English guy named Nick. And I figured, well, I can't be that bad. So I used to sneak in the door because I didn't want anybody else to see me that I was had anything to do with Christians. And I used to sneak in there and I'd watch and I'd listen. And I thought, maybe there's something about this. Maybe there's something about this God, but I still don't want it. I still don't want it. But I knew that something had to be different. Something had to change. And I fought everything against it. It was going to be God. I was going to be, I graduated. I barely graduated. I was threatened that I was going to be turned back, sent back to prison a couple of times because of my attitude, because of my violence, and because of my racism. I was very outspoken. I said it like it was, and I didn't care what you thought of me. An example is we used to have a group. We lived, you did a month in a house where you didn't belong to anybody, and then it was like our house one kind of thing now. You're just in a phase, but the next 2 months, you'd live with the same group of guys for the next 2 months, and I lived with these 12 guys for this month. And once a week, the Christian counselor lady would bring us all, and we'd all sit in a circle, all these drug addicts, and we'd pick on somebody. We'd get that person. We'd have to tell them something positive about them, or to say what they need to work on. And this week, it came to my turn. And we sat in this group, and Catherine was her name, and I'm in still contact with Catherine, amazing Christian lady. She had God put her in my path just at the right moment, because I wouldn't be here for the grace of God that Catherine was there. And she said, okay, I want everybody to say something about Nick. And nobody opened their mouths. And this went on for about, and it was just silence. It was silence. And I was looking at her, and she was looking at me, and then she said, what's going on here? Why won't anybody say anything? And about half a dozen, these are grown men, half a dozen of these grown men started crying, and they said, are you kidding? We would not say anything about Nick. He'll kill us. And I put my head down, and I started crying, and I looked up, and I said, is that the way you guys see me? And they go, yeah, that's who you are. And I didn't know that. I'd never seen myself like that. But that's who people knew who I was. I'd grown to be that person that put the fear of God into people. I could walk into any crack house anywhere, any drug house anywhere, and the fear of God I would put in. I didn't know that. I would walk in. I loved that power. I was addicted to that power, that I could do anything to anybody, and they knew I would do anything to anybody, and I loved it. And I became that person, and that was one of those wake-up calls for me, that I didn't see myself like that, and I didn't want to be like that, but I didn't know that that's how people saw me. I heard a group of guys talking. I had, part of my parole was that I had to find another place to live that was kind of institutionalized. And I heard some people talking about Freedom's Door in Kelowna, and I'd never been to Kelowna before. I asked this guy, I said, what's in Kelowna? He said, well, there's this place called Freedom's Door. It's a Christian place. And I go, oh, no. And I said, so I asked my parole officer if they could get me in there, and they got me in there. And the 1st of August 2006, I came to Kelowna. And I remember the guy that I work with now, Lloyd, he says, you have to go to church on Sunday. And I said, oh, no, I'm not a bunch of freaky Christians. You know, I despise these people. And so I went, and I just looked around. I didn't know if they would accept me. I didn't really care if anybody accepted me. I didn't care if anybody liked me or not. But it wasn't going to be God. But I asked everybody questions. I said, why do you guys eat crackers? Why do you drink juice? Why do you smile? And they answered my questions. And there was a couple of men in the church that really took me under their wing. And I could phone them up at night, and I'd say, ask them about this Bible passage and about this Bible passage. And they cared. And I didn't understand that, but they cared. There's a guy in the audience today, Trevor, who was my mentor back then. And he's sitting in the back row there. The first day I came into Freedom's Door, he walked in at the same time, pretty much about the same time, and said he's never done this before, but he's looking for a guy to mentor. And I walked in just as our paths crossed. Lloyd says, well, here's a new guy. He just came in, and there was Nick. And I told, so Trevor and I went out for coffee, and I told him my story, and I scared the crap out of him. And he wouldn't let me near his family. Wouldn't tell me where he lived. And I don't blame him. I didn't blame him at all. But it was a few months after that, and I know Trevor loves it when I tell this story. But and Claire and his wife and them, the mother-in-law we went up to a restaurant, The Haven, up on by KLO up there, and his two kids, Reed and Jesse, and we sat there, and it was like it was just a real God moment for me. And I sat there and I watched the two kids playing, and they were playing well. And they were laughing and having fun. And I had watched Trevor and Claire and the mother-in-law. And Trevor's getting along with the mother-in-law. And I'm going, wow, this is weird. And it's like God moved my chair back. And he made me see this whole thing. And I just got all weepy. And because I had never seen this before. This was not my world. There was no swearing. There was no fighting. There was no beer. There was no cocaine. There was no swearing, and it was a family, a normal family, and it scared me. I didn't know what this was. My call came. I went to Seton House with a gentleman right here, John, and I went to Seton House. The people in the church knew that I was always asking questions. I drove everybody nuts asking questions, and they asked me to go to this Christian's mentor retreat. It was different denominations at that time. And I went there, and I had all these questions. And it was amazing. It was amazing for me. All those little questions that I had just seemed to come together, and they got put together, and I floated off that hill. I floated off that hill. And then we had a Catholic lady that was a counselor that would come in, and she sat down with me the Monday after that. And I sat across her there, and I thought, wow, you know, it was such a great meeting, such a great weekend. You know, God just really touched me. And I got the call. God literally said, "You're going to Bible college." And I bawled, and I bawled, and I bawled, and I bawled. Me, Nick, the most disgusting person, violent person that I was, is getting the call from God. God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called. I'm still on parole. I'm still not allowed to be around anybody. I've on about 10 medications a day to keep me calm and at peace. I'm not allowed to be anybody, but I get a job and I'm allowed to work. And I'm going off to Bible college. And September 2006, I went to Bible college with no money to sign up for a 4-year course to get a BA in pastoral theology. The first week I was there, they asked for some money, and a man put up $1,000. That next week, that whole year got paid for by the grace of God. That went on for another 4 years. I had $0 by the grace of God. Over close to $60,000 to $80,000 came in and paid for my whole tuition for those 4 years. I hated my first semester with a passion. Now I'm Nick. I'm 45 years old. You had my background and everything, and now you plunk me into this different planet with a whole bunch of preacher's kids that are average age is 20, and all they talk about is Jesus and God. And I went nuts. I literally would go crazy. I would sit at a table. I'd try to pick a table all by myself, and all these little Christians would come migrate over to my table, and they want to know who I was. And they accepted me who I was, with who I am. And they loved me. And it was amazing. It was amazing. And I'd sit there and I'd wait for the table, and there'd be a girl that walked by, and I'd wait for a comment. I'd wait for a swear word. I'd wait for something. And it never came. And I used to go back in my room, and I used to crawl up in a ball. I used to cry. I used to bawl my eyes out to God, like, why have you got me here? Why have you got me here? I'm on a different planet. They don't speak my language. They asked me to, 6 weeks in, they asked me to tell my story in the chapel. And I told my story. And I could just see the looks on all these staff and all these people's faces. I was the first student that was still on parole. I had to check in once a week with my parole officer to see if I was taking any drugs or I was back in that lifestyle. I used to check in, and she just goes, "Well, how's it going?" I go, "I live in a Bible college. I'm not allowed. I haven't got a driver's license. I can't go anywhere." After my testimony, I looked around, and just like it was a bigger chapel than this. And I looked around at all the kids, and I go, "You guys touch each other way too much. And if you ever touch me, that will be the last thing you ever do." And the fear of God was on them. But I was serious. I didn't like to be touched at all. You didn't touch me. My very first class of Gospels, with the professors talking about Jesus and Joseph and Mary, and I'm going, and she told them that Joseph wasn't really Jesus' dad, that Mary was, it was a conception by the Holy Spirit. And I stood up, I put up my hand, I go, "No, it wasn't. She had an affair. She screwed around." That was my world, and I was serious. And it took me and the professor the next 2 weeks to explain to me what the Holy Spirit and God was all about. I went to the next week, we went to a historical books class, and the professor put up 1 kg on the board. And I go, "What are we learning out kilograms for?" And he looked at me, he goes, "That's First Kings, Nick." That was my world. Kilograms, grams, that's what you deal in. That's what makes the world go round. And I didn't know any better. My third year of Bible college, I was elected student body vice president. My fourth year of Bible college, I was elected class president of the graduating class. Only God can do that. Nothing I did, only by the grace of God. He qualifies the called. I get out and I look for a job and I come back to the place where it all started, Freedom's Door. You know, God, I never believed in God, and I think about every day, I think about why me? Look at who I was. Look at what I did. Look at all those people. And I'm sure there's lots of people out there today that think that Nick shouldn't have what he has today. I have been truly blessed. I'm standing before you today. I have been truly blessed. And probably people think that I should still be in prison. I agree. They probably think I should be dead. I agree. But by the grace of God, I'm standing here today. And only by the grace of God. We have a good God, a loving God. And that's why I love my job, because a guy would come into my office and he's saying, F Jesus and F God, and why should I believe in that? And I smile. And they wonder what I'm smiling about. And I say, because I sat there 7 years ago and I said the same thing. God can change lives. And, you know, working at Freedom's Door every day, I get paid to talk about Jesus. And people that knew me back then, they just shake their head. They think Nick's up to something again. He's got something in the works, but I don't. Every day I put in God's hands. I am God dependent 100%, because I didn't get where I am today without God, without His love, without His grace, without the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. I am stand here today, and I am a proud Christian. I am honored. I am not ashamed of the gospel. And so I truly believe that those guys, those 40 guys that are in Freedom's Door, there is a chance when so many people in our society write addicts off, write guys like me off. But I mean, who are we to say who God has chosen? It can be anybody. It can be anybody, one of those guys. Some guys don't make it, and I wonder why I didn't make it. Like I said, I've been shot, stabbed. I've been through windshields. I've had baseball bats across my head. I've been hospitalized so many times. I've been brought back to life twice. I've lost all my blood, literally all my blood twice. I've been bought. God has kept me alive to stand here today. Look at my wrists. I've got the scars to prove it, but God's got me. And God's got me here to give that word and to share that experience with these guys in that room. Not that I go around with a Bible under my arm and I slap these guys over the head with a Bible, because that isn't what worked for me. But what Trevor and Claire taught me was it was about love. It's about family. It's about relationship. And that's what God wants with us first and foremost, is have a relationship with Him. And it's on His terms. I mean, we try to make it legalistic, or we have to perform, we have to dress some way. But that's not what God. God just wants our heart. He wants us broken, if we are broken. I thank you. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to share today. And this has just been an honor and a blessing that I can come here today. I get to do this not as often, but I get to do it, and I get such a joy out of doing it. And I get a joy. Like I said, I get paid to talk about Jesus all day, and it doesn't get better than that. And I get to hear guys that come from my life, kind of lifestyle. I had a guy from the neo-Nazis. This guy's 6'8", over 300 pounds, swastikas all over his body. He phones me up. First, I couldn't figure out how he tracked me down. This guy is I thought I was a nut job. This guy's a nut job. And he tracks me down, and I get this message that this guy had phoned. Names doesn't matter. And I go, well, like, how did, this was when I was in Bible college. How did he track me down here? And I went to the professor and I said, you know, should I phone this guy back? And he said, no, you shouldn't phone him back. He's one of the head guys in the neo-Nazis. And I went up to my room and I prayed about it, and I thought, you know, if they've tracked me down here, and if they know where I am, they'll come and get me if they want to get me. So I phoned him up, and we were talking, and I go, like, what do you want? Why did you phone me? Why did you track me down? And he goes, I hear you do that church thing now, and I was wondering if you could take me to church one day. One of the guys that I used to work for, I worked for a couple of years, he tried to kill me so many times, shoved guns up in my face. He phoned me up at Christmas. I wanted to have coffee at at Tim's, he first things that come out of his mouth, I want to teach you to teach me about that Bible. I married one of the Hell's Angels last summer. A guy I had known for years. They knew who I am now, and they know what era I came from, and they're wanting to change. I get phone calls asking me, how do I get out? By the grace of God, go I. So I thank you. That's been awesome. Bless you.